Rain. High temperatures today will range from the mid-40s in northern Illinois to the low 60s in central Missouri, and lows tonight will range from the mid-20s in northern Iowa to the low 40s in southern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, sunny, look for a high of 55, the wind light, and from the northwest tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 32, the wind will be light and from the east. Tomorrow, partly sunny, the high 52 with the wind out of the east. From 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, occasional rain. We'll see a low in the upper 30s. The wind will be from the east at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday, occasional rain. Cooler, expect a high in the mid-40s. The wind from the east at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday night, cloudy with a chance of rain. The low in the upper 30s. Sunday and Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a high Sunday in the mid-40s and a low Sunday night around 30. Monday through Tuesday night, partly cloudy, highs through the period in the low 40s, lows in the upper 20s. At noon Central Time, temperatures ranged from the mid-30s to the upper 50s across Illinois and Indiana, and we had a mix of sky conditions at Rockford. It was foggy and 35 degrees, cloudy at O'Hare, 39 degrees. In Bloomington and Mattoon, sunny, 42 degrees at Bloomington, 48 at Mattoon. It was sunny at Carbondale, 57 degrees reported there. A cloudy sky at South Bend, 40 degrees. Lafayette, 45 and mostly sunny. Indianapolis, 47 and sunny. Terre Haute, 38 and cloudy. Willard Airport reported a mostly sunny sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 41, the dew point 37, the relative humidity 86%, the wind out of the southwest at 5, and the barometric pressure 30.31 and falling. And at 12:39, sunny in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the temperature 43 degrees. Illinois' credit rating is the worst in the nation. The state cannot afford to pay billions of dollars it has racked up in bills. And after years of avoiding pension payments, there's worry that the day may come when there's too little money to pay retirees. That's the condition Illinois is in. But Governor Pat Quinn did not focus on those troubles yesterday during his State of the State address. Instead, he highlighted Illinois' successes and laid out a course aimed at creating jobs. Quinn wants tax relief and to help returning veterans and college students. As Amanda Vinicky reports, it has left lawmakers wondering how he can do it.
Quinn didn't ignore Illinois' fiscal problems outright, more like he pushed them off, saying he'll give specifics on the serious matters of pension and Medicaid costs in 3 weeks when he gives his budget address, a stance he justified by saying that Illinois can't leave it at that, hence his theme, Moving Illinois Forward.
We have real challenges to tackle. And like all of you, I recognize the severity of our financial situation. But cuts alone will not resolve the situation. We must build and grow our economy. Now is not the time to pull back, to abandon our children, to abandon our parents, and to abandon the unemployed among us. Their well-being is our common cause.
The governor plans to improve parents' well-being by establishing what he calls a child tax credit. Details are sparse, but it appears to give parents a $50 per kid annual tax credit. Given that it comes nearly a year after Illinois hiked the income tax, that idea doesn't square for Republican Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington, who unsuccessfully challenged Quinn in the last election.
This state is unfortunately one of the worst states when it comes to unemployment. We need a governor who will focus on that. He imposes a 67% increase, tax increase on families and businesses, and then tries to fluff it back with a $100 per family, per child tax credit. I mean, this isn't the real world.
Quinn did take pains to reach out to businesses. Companies already get a tax credit for hiring unemployed veterans. The governor proposes increasing that if firms take on vets coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. And the governor wants to eliminate a tax everyone, households and businesses alike, pay on natural gas. That'd be a boon to manufacturers, says Doug Whitley, head of the state's Chamber of Commerce. Whitley also commends Quinn for his plans to boost Illinois' foreign trade by creating an Export Advisory Council. And he praises the governor's clean water environmental agenda, which includes sewer upgrades and water main repairs.
Because water systems are under the ground, for most people, it's out of sight, out of mind. But in fact, those systems do need to have added investment.
Quinn also spent time reminding the public of corporate success stories in the state, from Caterpillar to Ford to Chrysler. It was a direct response to those who say Illinois has been bad for businesses. As part of a longer-term jobs agenda, Quinn proposes propping up state funding of early childhood education and giving extra tuition aid to low-income students. Southern Illinois University President Glenn Prashard says that'd make a huge difference.
You know, our public universities have been the gatekeepers for low-income students forever to get an opportunity to get a degree. That's the meal ticket to the great middle class. If that disappears, and it is disappearing because the increases in tuition due to the fact that the state has not been able to pay us, you know, That just falls most heavily on the low-income families.
Quinn didn't elaborate on any of the initiatives. He offered no details, like how much the tuition grants should be, nor did he say how the child tax credit would work. But early estimates from Republicans peg the cost of the entire package at $500 million. $500 million Illinois can't afford. Comptroller Judy Bartopinka says it reminded her of Quinn's disgraced predecessor, Rod Blagojevich.
This is like Blagojevich light. Okay, I mean, lots of programs out there with no money to back it up. And I know, you know, I don't want to sound like the voice of doom, but I mean, I got to pay the bills. And, you know, if it's almost like a marriage, if my spendthrift husband is off going around spending and I have to get a credit card bill at the end of the month, that's an ouch.
It's Blagojevich who gets much of the blame for getting Illinois into the financial mess that it's in. But despite Quinn's desire to move Illinois forward, Republicans say that's impossible until the state's finances are fixed. Quinn is expected to elaborate on his budget ideas in another major speech on February 22nd. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 12:44. Richard Starkey had dreams of being a musician long before he took up the drums, joined the Beatles, and became Ringo Starr. But his career didn't end when the band broke up. He's recorded many albums since then. His latest is Ringo 2012. NPR's David Green gave it a listen.
Those looking for flashes of the Beatles on this new album, well, maybe.
This is the day. Don't turn it away. This is an anthem.
Despite the fame the Fab Four brought him, Ringo Starr has made an effort to be his own man.
I was asked many times to write my autobiography, but basically people only want the 8 years I was in the Beatles. They're not really interested in my...
You're like, there are other important times, too.
There are. There'd be 10 volumes before I got to the Beatles. You know, after we split up, it was pretty difficult to get your own identity. You were still, like, you know, one of the Beatles. Now, I did 17 CDs. This is my 17th record. Let's talk about that.
When I was a kid in Liverpool, the rain never stopped, but the sun always shone in my mind. In Liverpool.
On this album, Ringo Starr does go back to his roots in Liverpool. He sings about the lads he grew up with. And let's be clear, we're not talking about those lads, John, Paul, and George.
I had a lot of friends before the Beatles. From when I was 5 till I was 18, there was 3 of us in the neighborhood, and we did everything together.
Me and the boys, me and the gang, living our fantasies. That's how it was for me. How was it for you?
Ringo wrote or co-wrote most of the songs on this CD. He says he never composes a song the same way twice. Sometimes he starts with the rhythm, sometimes it's the lyrics. One of his most famous songs came to him in his sleep.
I went to bed that night, and just as I was falling asleep, I heard this sound in my mind going, back off, Boogaloo. I said, back off, Boogaloo. So I had the melody and the words going here. So I ran downstairs to put it on tape in those days and get that down, because as I was singing it, which was really weird, back off, it was turning into, oh, the sun, it's turning into Mac the Knife. I say, no, not Mac the Knife.
We got to stay away from
back
that.
Back off. Things like that just come from God. You can't plan everything in your life. Things just arrive and you can go with it. Back off.
One song that does stand out on the new album, Ringo 2012, is a sentimental one. It's called Wonderful, and it's about his wife of 30-plus years, Barbara Bach.
And we made it through the way we always do. Because for me and you, the worst it ever was wonderful.
I don't want to pry, but I've read that one of the very difficult things that you went through together as a couple was battling alcoholism. And I just wonder how she helped you through something so hard like that.
I had a really problem with substance abuse. We both did, really, but this is not me talking about her. And anyway, I came out of a blackout and I asked her to make a phone call, and which she did. And that's how it started. You know, I ended up in a 12-step rehab. And so far, so good.
Step lightly. You're moving too fast. Take your time, boy.
His new album is what we've come to expect from Ringo Starr. It's biographical, upbeat, and optimistic. He said goodbye to us with his customary
peace and love to everybody out there.
That's Ringo Starr, and I'm David Green, NPR News.
Thursday, WILL and its community partners team up again to fight hunger. This year, for every pledge made to WILL, Common Ground Food Co-op will donate the cost of 8 meals to Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Your pledge supports the programs you depend on and fights hunger in our community.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 2nd of February, 2012. It's the birthday of James Joyce, born in Dublin, 1882, who said, "The demand that I make of my reader is that he should devote his whole life to reading my works." James Joyce, who wrote Ulysses, 1922, Finnegan's Wake, 1939, Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man, 1916, and his short story collection Dubliners in 1914. He was educated by Jesuits, first visited a prostitute at the age of 14, dropped out of medical school, wanted to be an opera star, and then he met and fell in love with a hotel maid from Galway named Nora Barnacle when he was 22, and he set the action of his book Ulysses on the day he had his first date with her, June 16, 1904, now commemorated all over the world each year as Bloomsday, after the protagonist of Ulysses, Leopold Bloom. He convinced Nora to leave Ireland with him and elope to Europe, where he did all his best work and where they were forever impoverished, constantly relying on his brother Stanislaus for money. They had a son, Giorgio, and after that they slept head to foot and attempted birth control. But then Nora became pregnant with Lucia about a year later. James Joyce was a doting father, liked to spoil his kids, never punished either one of them, told an interviewer, "Children must be educated by love, not punishment." Nora was apathetic towards her husband's writing. Joyce worked at night. He laughed so loud at his own words sometimes she'd get up and tell him to stop writing and stop laughing so she could get some sleep. Shortly after Ulysses was published, which, by the way, Joyce pronounced Ulysses, Nora remarked to a fan of his, "I've always told him he should give up writing and take up singing." James Joyce was afraid of thunder and lightning. He'd go hide under the bed whenever it struck. And he was afraid of dogs. He walked around town with rocks in his pockets so he could throw them at any dogs who came near him. He loved music and literature, but he had no patience for art, for painting. On his desk, he had a tiny bronze statue of a woman lying back in a chair with a cat draped over her shoulders, which all of his friends told him was ugly, but he kept it on his desk anyway. One of his friends said he had no taste, only genius. He liked to drink and he liked to dance, and his daughter-in-law said that liquor went to his feet, not his head. He usually sat with his legs crossed, with the toe of one crossed again under the calf of the other. He was kind and generous to strangers. He would invite waiters to come sit down at his table. His friend Sylvia Beach said that Joyce treated people invariably as his equals, whether they were writers, children, waiters, princesses, or charladies. If he arrived in a taxi, he wouldn't get out until the driver had finished what he was saying. And Joyce himself fascinated everybody. Nobody could resist his charm. James Joyce, who said, "The artist, like the god of the creation, remains within or behind or beyond or above his handiwork, invisible, refined, out of existence, indifferent, paring his fingernails." Here's a poem for today by John Stone, entitled "Autopsy in the Form of an Elegy." In the chest, in the heart, was the vessel, was the pulse, was the art, was the love, was the clot, small